7.
Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're talking about our inability to think, and yet that was one of God's great gifts to us. God gave us a soul, all animal souls, but the soul enables us to be observant. The one thing that distinguishes plants from animals is that plants don't have souls, animals do. God was specific in that instruction in his testimony to us. What a soul primarily enables animals, of which humankind are, to observe and respond to their environment. An animal can examine things that are happening and can respond or react to those things. So God gave us a soul, but souls are mortal. If you've ever watched someone die, one moment they're alive, next moment they're not. The only thing that is different is their soul is gone, the breath of life. The second thing that he gave us is free will. That's the reason why you can say, you know, I don't want homosexuality promoted as normal when it is abnormal, as productive when the health and longevity of those who are homosexual is less than those who are heterosexual. You can say, I don't want to promote it as good or normal when it is unhealthy and abnormal, but you can't go beyond that. You can't. The moment you say that it can't be allowed, then you're moving into an area where you're working against God's intent. God's intent was to give people free will. They can let people do what they choose to do, so long as what they do is not harmful to others. So, for example, the Rudolph case where he was opposed to homosexuality, that's inappropriate in terms of removing choice from individuals. Why I am a huge advocate of legalizing all drugs. Stupid to use? Absolutely. Unhealthy? Surely. Counterproductive? You bet. But if they're legalized, people can exercise free will. They can choose to destroy themselves if they wish to. And, of course, in so doing, you eliminate so many various kinds of crimes. The majority of crime in America is related one way or another to drugs. Story that we covered in Afghanistan, we look at the consequence of the production of drugs because of the distribution and sale of it. And so the second thing that God gave us is free will. We ought not infringe with that. It's why in a program like this, we're going to tell you what God said. What you choose to do with it is yours. It is up to you. Not going to try to compel you. Not going to try to tell you, boy, you need to believe this way or it's the highway. Or not going to even tell you that I'm right and you're wrong. I'm irrelevant. What I might believe or think is irrelevant. And what do you believe and think is your choice. It is relevant to know what God has to say. That's relevant. And so we're going to share that. What you choose to do with it is up to you. You choose to embrace what he has to say, trust it, respond to it, consider it, ignore it, reject it, oppose it. It's your choice. The third thing that God gave us was a nesama. That's the one thing he said that not only made us unique as a unique creation, a nesama, but he said that it was our nesama that made us like him in his image, which means a like him, but in reduced dimensions, lesser power. It's kind of like the terms that he uses is sort of like a shadow versus the real deal, a two-dimensional representation of a three-dimensional object. And so we have this nesama, and nesama is our conscience. It's our ability to process what we observe so that we come to understand, so that we can exercise good judgment, so that we can intelligently, rationally, morally, appropriately respond to what we observe. So you put these things together. We have the capacity to be observant. We have the capacity to process what we observe so that we understand it. And we have free will, so we have the freedom to respond to what God is telling us. Those are the things that he gave us in his mortal life. Those things are perfectly suited to enable those of us who wish to capitalize on what God is offering. And that's the entire purpose of this program. Well, I want you to observe, whether it's through thinking or seeing or reading, what God is offering, come to understand it, and then respond. Here's what God said to us regarding what happens when you either fail to process the information or just fail to observe it in the first place. Here's the consequence of what is so pervasive around America now. It's the reason that we talked about the Boston bombing is because almost everyone that is talking about it is not either ignorant of the information, which would cause them to say the opposite of what they're saying, or they're unable to connect the dots and therefore unable to understand it. So what God is going to tell us now, specifically related to his foundational document, his Torah, his teaching and guidance, his set of instructions, that there's a genuine consequence of being ignorant, just as there is when we blather on ignorantly regarding what happened in Boston. God says, my people are completely destroyed and they will perish. So he is saying that eternal damnation in hell is not what is being discussed here. He has now completely undermined the concept that is promoted in Christianity and Islam, where a soul either goes to heaven or hell. Because he said, my people are destroyed and they will perish. They will be cut off and they will cease to exist. So he's talking about a consequence here that is not heaven and not hell, ceasing to exist. My people are completely destroyed and they will perish. They will cease to exist because of a lack of understanding. Belly. You see, understanding is what we were talking about in the first segment, even all the way through it. Understanding is this concept of observing the evidence, coming to know the evidence, making appropriate connections, using probability to come to understand what is occurring, what has occurred, what is most likely to occur. And then once you understand, then you're in a position to respond. But understanding this belay concept, which is contemplation, it's discernment. To understand, you have to first observe. And God is going to say it's not just a lack of understanding. Well, it is a lack of understanding, but the lack of understanding has occurred because we have rejected and avoided the one completely and totally reliable source of information and guidance that can lead to understanding. You know, it's the computer adage, garbage in, garbage out. If you are fixated with video games, if you're fixated with reading comic books, if you're fixated with religious propaganda, if you're fixated with political propaganda, if you're intake and observation is of things that are not reliable, does not matter whether or not you exercise discernment. Rubbish in, rubbish out. So this is a combined statement here. My people are completely destroyed and they will perish. They will cease to exist. Upon their mortal death, their souls will cease to be because of a lack of understanding. You see, if you don't understand, you can't respond. Indeed, because, he said, you have totally avoided and completely rejected. You have spurned and despised. You have refused and disdained knowledge and understanding. Dayat is primarily knowledge. It's information which can lead to discernment. We don't spend our time focusing on those things which enable us to know, and then because of political correctness, we don't exercise good judgment so that we come to understand. Now, God is saying that this condition leads to the death and destruction of your soul. Ignorance is not bliss. God is not going to judge you based on the content of your heart. If you don't know, you can't understand. If you don't understand, you cannot respond. If you do not respond to God in what He is offering, at the end of your mortal existence, you are going to cease to exist. My people are completely destroyed and they will perish because of a lack of understanding. Indeed, because you have totally avoided and rejected knowledge and understanding, so then I will consistently reject you and I will avoid all association with you. It is impossible to have a relationship with God that isn't knowledge and information based. All of those little Christians out there that say, oh, I have such a wonderful little relationship with my precious Jesus. You can't tell me that my faith isn't real. God has just told you that. If you do not observe His testimony, if you don't consider His answers, if you have rejected His Torah guidance and teaching, and therefore have not processed it, do not understand it, then what God is saying, you don't know Him, and He does not know you. He will not have a relationship with you. You've avoided what He has offered. You've avoided His introduction of Himself to you. You've avoided the meetings that He has declared for you to be welcomed into His company. And He is saying, you do not have a relationship with Him. Your relationship is no different than the Mormon football player at the Catholic school that had the imaginary girlfriend. Your relationship with your Lord is imagined. It's not a genuine relationship with the real and genuine God. It's appropriate that we are considering a statement that Yahweh, speaking to us in first person, conveyed through a prophet whose name means salvation, Hosea. It's been transliterated as Hosea 4:6, where he says that my people are destroyed. They cease to exist. Their souls are annihilated because of a lack of understanding. Indeed, because you have totally avoided and rejected knowledge, so then I will consistently reject you and avoid you. Since you have continually ignored the Torah, the teaching, the guidance, the instruction of your God, I also would consistently ignore your children. When we as parents rear our children in Islam, in Christianity, in socialist secular humanism, we, by any rational standard, poison them. We create within them the lack of a desire to consider the only document that can answer questions regarding a relationship with God, regarding being saved by God. And so what God is saying is that those parents who make this choice hurt more than just themselves. And if it were only individuals harming themselves because of free will, God wouldn't care. It's meaningless to God if a person chooses to ignore him. Meaningless to God if a person chooses to reject him. Meaningless to God if a person chooses to have an imaginary relationship with an imaginary deity. Doesn't care. Gave you free will. Your choice. But he does care when we poison our children. That saddens him. And that's why this statement reads this way. When we as parents ignore the Torah, we all but condemn our own children. You know, one of the issues with our children, and this was actually written in the masculine, Ben, I will consistently ignore your sons, is that the only way for a male to benefit from Yah's path from our troubled world to his home, the only means to salvation is the doorway that begins with Passover and goes through unleavened bread, first fruits, and seven Sabbaths. You can't participate as a male if you're not circumcised. If parents don't heed the Torah and don't circumcise their sons can't participate unless later in life they choose to become circumcised on their own. God says that his home in heaven is off limits to men who are not circumcised. It's the sign of the covenant. You're excluded. So if a parent is ignorant of the Torah's instructions, then their children, particularly their sons, will not be prepared to enter heaven. They'll be excluded. Yeah, God is that way. He says, this is my home. I will establish the conditions, the provisions for entering. Every right to do so. He gave you life. It was a gift. He gave you free will. It was a gift. He gave you the ability to be discerning and discriminating. It was a gift. How you use them is up to you. But if you choose to be part of his eternal family, you enter based upon his conditions. It's only reasonable. And so God is saying that if parents don't care enough to examine the Torah, don't read the Torah, don't share the Torah with their children, if their teaching does not incorporate God's teaching, if their guidance to their children does not incorporate God's guidance to his children, then it is inevitable that those parents will have poisoned their own children. They will have pushed their children in the wrong direction. They will have turned their children in the wrong direction. Rather than walking away from religion and from their allegiance to their country, such children will be patriotic, they'll be political, and they will be religious. And as a result, they won't know God. God will not know them. So, my friends, ignorance is not bliss. It is the path to perishing. Those who justify aren't justified. I just didn't know is not an excuse with God, nor as everybody else was doing it, how was I to know that it was wrong? The truth is available. All you have to do is Shabbat. Stop what you're doing long enough to reflect on what God has to say, to shamar, to shema. Shamar is to observe, closely examining, carefully considering. Shema is to listen, reciting God's Torah, to listen to what he had to say. Especially those things that focus on settling our debts so we can settle down with him, all aspects of the Shabbat. When we return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break, we will consider what God etched in stone in the 10 statements regarding the importance of the Shabbat. Commercial break. One of the messages was from the gentleman that owns Genesis Communication Network. His name is Ted Anderson. He was encouraging listeners to read a book called The Creature from Jekyll Island. I have read it cover to cover a number of times. I would highly recommend it. His comment was, it's time to understand the system. He was speaking of the U.S. monetary system, and indeed, once you understand it, you'll recognize that fiat money is a disastrous thing. You'll understand that the Federal Reserve is a disastrous institution. But the reason I'm mentioning that, where he says it's time to understand the system. Well, there's a system for life. There's a system for knowing God. There's a system for engaging in the covenant relationship with God. There is a system for knowing God's name and how to pronounce it. There is a system for meeting with God. There's a system to become immortal, a system to become vindicated, perfect in God's eyes. There's a system to be born into His covenant family. There's a system to be empowered and to be enriched by Him. There's a system to ultimately have your relationship with Him reconciled so that you can camp out with Him forever. There's a system for these things. It's a book that I would also recommend you read. It's so prevalent that that anyone with internet access can read it. You can find a copy of it in places all around the world called the Torah. The Torah is where God's system of life, of relationships, and of salvation is presented. The Torah is God's system. Now, since He is the creator of the universe, since He is the author of life, since He is the only God, since He is His system is the only way to escape our mortality, isn't it surprising that so few people consider His system? Well, His system is based upon 6, which is the number of man, created on the 6th day, in addition to God who is one, equaling the promise of us being together. That is His system. That system is manifest in the Shabbat, which is why He is so insistent on it. In fact, when He etched 10 statements in stone, on the second of those 2 tablets where He has the 7 instructions, the first of those 7 instructions is more lengthy than all of the rest combined. It is the most lengthy of all of the instructions because it's imparting the most information. It's about the Shabbat. And yet, far fewer than 0.1% of the world's population pays any attention to this advice. It's the system of life, the system of salvation, the system of having a relationship with God. It's the system of creation, the very plan of creation. It's the very plan of salvation. And yet not 0.1% of the world's population pays any attention to this system. Here it is as Yahweh etched it in stone. Remember, zakar, recall, reflect upon, recognize, mention, proclaim. Be earnestly mindful that the Shabbat, the 7th day, the time of promise when our debts are settled so we can settle down with God based upon His oath and promise to us. Remember, recall, earnestly be mindful, recognize that the Shabbat, the 7th day, is set apart. It is Kodesh. It is separated unto God. It is special. This was conveyed, written with the peel stem, where the object endures the action, the infinitive construct, which it serves as a verbal noun. What does that mean? Remember that the 7th day is set apart. Who's the object of this instruction? We are. So by our actions, we become an infinitive construct. What does that mean? That means by remembering, by earnestly being mindful of what the Shabbat represents, we become the action. We become set apart. The verb kadosh, which is the verbal form of kadosh, which is the Hebrew word set apart. This is the actionable form of it. As a verbal noun, it says that when we reflect upon the Shabbat and the fact that it is set apart, that this promise based upon 7 When we do that, we become the action. Our actions make us set apart. What is the Sabbath set apart to? Unto God. What is it special to? To God. If you want to become set apart to God, if you want to be special to God, observe the Shabbat, the seventh day. So if God's saying this, why is it that fewer than 1 in 1,000 people observe the Shabbat? God then goes on to say, this would be the, that was the 20th chapter, 7th verse of Shemoth, which means names, corrupted Exodus. This is the 8th, that was the 8th verse. This will be the 9th. 6, which is speaking of that which is bleached white and adorned in fine linen from Sheth days, Yomim. You can actually and continuously work, Abad. You can labor. Call stem in perfect conjugation. That means that you can make a practice of working. And, you know, we're talking about literal work. 6 days, work all you want. Do anything you want. Abad for 6 days. Call stem in perfect conjugation. Actually, literally, on an ongoing individual basis. And you can genuinely engage in the totality of all of your service representing the heavenly messenger and your service of proclaiming the message. Malacca. Asha Malacca. You can engage. You can participate. And everything associated with representing the messenger and proclaiming the message. But on the seventh, which means that which is being presented as a solemn promise, which fulfills and satisfies those who listen regarding the role of the seventh day. But on the seventh, the Shabbat, HaShabbat, the seventh day, which on our calendars is, we call now Saturday, didn't have a name in Yah's testimony other than it was called the Shabbat, which is the seventh day. Shabbat and seventh day, the same. It's not the first day of the week, it's the seventh day of the week. But on the seventh day, the Shabbat of Yahweh. So, is the Shabbat a Jewish thing? Or you want to make a God Jewish? No, it's the Shabbat of Yahweh, your God. So anybody that says, oh, that if you're observing the Sabbath, you must be Jewish. You must be mired in that arcane and old-fashioned, mean-spirited and enslaving, incapable of saving, dead and impotent Torah. That's what Paul called it in his letter to the Galatians. Now it says right here, but the seventh day, the Shabbat, is of Yahweh. In fact, it is La Yahweh. La as a preposition doesn't primarily mean of Yahweh. It primarily speaks of approaching. It means to, as in the concept of moving toward something or someone. So, but the seventh day, the Shabbat, is about approaching Yahweh, your God. You should never actually engage in lo asha. You should not habitually do, consistently prepare or produce. You should not consistently fashion or furnish, advance or assign, accomplish or act upon any part of the work of God's representative and messenger, yourself, your son, your daughter, your male and female servants and staff, your means of production, as well as those visitors who relationally are in your home, property, or community. Why, this is the day that God engages. It's a day for us to rest and reflect on what God has done for us. We should not assume that we are doing any of the work that required to save us. That's what God is telling you here. This is the day to rest and reflect on what He has done. And He says, you know, this applies to you, your sons, your daughters, your male and female servants and staff, the means of production, as well as those visitors who are in your home. For indeed, in 6 days, Yahweh acted and engaged, preparing and producing everything associated with completing accordingly the heavens and the earth and the seas and all that is relationally in them. God is saying, you know, I didn't just talk the talk, I walk the walk. Like all fathers, God set the example so that we could walk with him. Even in this previous statement where God says, I don't want you to do this, he used with Lo Asah, the call stem and the imperfect conjugation. Almost all of the seven instructions that God etched in stone are written in the imperfect conjugation. In fact, it may be all of them. What does the imperfect conjugation say? It says, you know, don't make a practice of engaging on the Shabbat. You know, do your thing 6 days of the week. Don't make a practice of this on the seventh. Why would he say don't make a practice of it? It's the same thing that he has on the instructions of viewing our Heavenly Father and Spiritual Mother, choosing to do that as is significant of not killing, of not lying, of not committing adultery. He knows that we're imperfect. His Torah is not set up to say, oh, well, boy, you goofed on that one. So because you goofed on that one time, it's over for you. That's not that way. He uses the imperfect conjugation with these things, not the perfect. So he's speaking of an ongoing pattern of behavior. You commit adultery, that's not good. But if you consistently commit adultery, that becomes the problem. If you lie, that's not good. But it's the practice of habitually lying that's the problem. It's not killing once. It's making a hobby of it. For those... to Shattering Myths, we're considering Yah's statement that he etched in stone regarding the importance of the Shabbat, because when you understand the Shabbat instruction, it provides the system that God is using to not only settle our debts, but to enable us to settle with him. He said, for indeed, in 6 days, Yahweh acted and engaged, preparing and producing and completing everything accordingly that is associated with the heavens, the spiritual realm, and the earth, the material realm, the seas, and all which is relationally in them. God not only talks the talk, he walks the walk. God leads by example. He tells you what he is going to do. He tells you what is beneficial for you to do. And then he does himself precisely what he has instructed. That way we can follow him. He is not like the rest of the world who says one thing and does another. God is consistent. He talks the talk. He walks the walk. And here is the next statement which affirms that. God is now writing this with his own hand, and he says, and he became completely settled during the Almighty's seventh day. Now, you could read that as he became completely settled, or it became completely settled. But it's from Nuach. He rested after settling all unresolved issues during the Almighty's Ha Shavi Al, God's solemn promise, which fulfills and satisfies those who listened and are observant. It's especially about the role of the oath of the seventh day. Therefore, Yahweh blessed and adored everything associated with this day, the Shabbat, setting it apart. So if you want to know God's will, well, it's God's will to bless and adore the seventh day. Don't ask God for his will when you're going to a church service on Sunday. You don't want to know it. You don't care to know it. Therefore, Yahweh knelt down, lowered himself to greet those he had created on the seventh day. This was written in the P.O. Perfect. You see, when it applies to God, it's no longer the imperfect, it's the P.O. Perfect. God did everything necessary when he knelt down in love on the seventh day, matzah, in 33 CE, in year 4000 Yah, Pesach. And God got on his knees, allowed us to whip him, affix him to an upright pole, and then had his soul go into Sheol, diminished on our behalf. Yahweh not only talks the talk, he walks the walk. And so he became completely settled during the Almighty seventh day. Therefore, Yahweh got on his knees to lift up, to greet, to extol everything associated with the Shabbat, setting it apart, Kodesh, separating it from all other days. You want to be separated unto God? Observe the Shabbat. Does God observe the Shabbat? Absolutely. That's why this is the day that he actually observes. And if you want to meet with him, you ought to observe it as well. The reason that the Shabbat is associated with a cessation of our work is because our interaction regarding salvation determines whether or not our souls will continue to exist. Should one work for their salvation, should they try to resolve their debts and earn the right to settle in God's home on their own, their soul will be dissipated into nothingness upon their death. Should you not heed and learn from and benefit from the instructions related to the seventh day, should you not observe this day and understand that this is God's system, then you'll cease to exist. Those who desist from considering their eternal fate will suffer that fate. But should we rely exclusively on the work done by Yahweh through Yahusha, should we meet with God at these parties, where, by the way, we're not asked to do anything other than to meet with God, recognize what the menu is, and have a good time. We're asked simply to accept the invitation, read when it's occurring, and agree to meet with God at that time. Those who do are saved. Those who embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant and choose to have a relationship with God based upon the system that he has provided and walk with God along the path that he has provided, they will be saved. They will have the opportunity to live with God in his home. Will you join us there?
Pharmacist Ben Fuchs believes virtually all disease states can be backtracked to digestive problems.
Deficiencies in stomach acid can affect all downstream